But once again, these are our Tuesday night classes, the lifestyle class. We started them over a year ago. I've only missed a couple of Tuesday nights. And this is because this is pretty foundational to our lifestyle. This was one of the early classes that we presented on prasadam or spiritual foodstuffs. And you can see the PowerPoint is much more rudimentary than the ones that we do nowadays. And but we weren't recording the classes at those times to put them on the website as MP3s. And so none of you were here at that time anyway. And prasadam is always a favorite subject. It always puts Radha Krishna just immediately breaks in a big smile. Everybody, as soon as you say prasadam, I proved that last Sunday, all the devotees, if you don't know what prasadam means and you're kind of wondering why everyone's grinning from ear to ear, after tonight, you'll also be grinning from ear to ear whenever you hear the word prasadam. So this is on prasadam, or spiritual foodstuffs. And the basis for offering all of our food to the Lord, and I think Pad Prema just took the plate off the altar, I think, as he went downstairs. Whenever we cook from certain categories of foodstuffs. We don't necessarily cook what we'd eat, but we cook what Krishna likes to eat. And this is the verse where he describes what he likes to eat. Now, you may be questioning, you know, God likes to eat. What difference does it make to God? You know, he doesn't, does he eat? Does he, like, have a material body? He has to digest and get energy, all those kinds of things. No, God has a spiritual body. We're spirit inside of a material body. But the difference between ourselves and God is that I have a form and he has a form, but he's spirit through and through. There's no difference between the inside and the outside. And he doesn't have to eat material food to maintain his body. But he does eat the food that's offered to him in love and devotion. He just eats in a different way. When you have a spiritual body, one of the features of having a spiritual body is that any one sense can perform the full-fledged functions of any other sense. In a material body, we can only eat with our mouth, we can only smell with our nose, we can only see with our eyes. But in the body of the Lord, he can by hearing the prayers and the devotion that we intone when we offer it, he eats, you see. He can taste with his eyes, he can speak with his ears, he can touch with his nose. Any sense can perform the full-fledged function of any other sense. And that's not true of our body. One sense can only do one thing, another sense has to do it. So just by hearing the prayers that we offer, he enjoys, he tastes that food, he relishes that food. And having done so, having touched the food by his glance and by his hearing, it assumes divine characteristics. And those who have tasted prasadam, who are in a purified state of consciousness, taste prasadam, can taste the difference between prasadam, spiritually offered food, and ordinary food that's not offered. Even if it's vegetarian, even if it's raw food, even if it's the purest of the pure, even if it's super, super excellent organic, still something spiritual is added to it when it's offered to the Lord. It becomes something different than which is prasadam. The word for even vegetarian food, before it's offered, it's called bhoga. And that means food for one's own personal sense enjoyment. Even if it's vegetarian, whatever pain has been caused in the accumulation of those foodstuffs, you have to pay the bill. You have responsibility. It's obviously not as much pain as if you'd killed an animal and shed its blood to eat a carrot or a cauliflower. The pain level is, for a sentient living being with a highly developed vertebrae and a nervous system that screams and sheds blood, obviously the pain for which you will be responsible karmically is way, way up there. And the pain for which you'll be responsible karmically in eating carrots and grains and fruits is like very little, maybe 1/10,000th of the amount. But still, there's some there. Because any time you cause pain, you have to be accountable for that. So there's a mechanism by which the Lord allows us to eat, because we have to eat something to subsist. But we're not animals. You know, animals eat other animals, that's true. But animals can't understand God consciousness. So if you want to eat like the animals, if you want to use it as an excuse to eat meat, well, the animals eat meat, I'll eat meat, it means you're an animal. Well, you can't understand God, because animals don't, we don't have any cats or dogs here. Sometimes we bring the parrot up, but he doesn't understand. So if you want to use it as an excuse to eat meat, well, the animals do it, then that means you're no better than the animals. You're an animal. And no animal in the history world ever understood God. So the human beings have to eat something to subsist, but Krishna gives the list. We have to eat something. So Krishna says, grains, fruits, flowers, we don't eat flowers. We offer flowers. We don't eat them. Well, you can eat them. Dandelions are pretty good. But anyway, fruits, grains, leaves, vegetables, legumes, and dairy products. So those are the foods that God prescribes to offer to Him. And because we're Krishna devotees, we're not going to eat anything which isn't offered to Him, because we don't want to eat anything that has karma. So we're not exactly vegetarians. We're Krishnarians. If Krishna said eat meat, we'd probably eat offer meat. But He doesn't say that, because He doesn't want us to shed the blood of His other creatures and parts and parcels unnecessarily. He's created a lower order of foodstuff, a lower level of pay by which we can subsist. And if we simply offer the food, then whatever karma is in there is removed. So this is the verse in 9th chapter, 27th verse. Patram pushvam phalam tavim nyome bhakti priyatiti tadaham bhakti upavritam ashnami pariyatapna. One offers me flower, fruit, leaf, and water in love and devotion, I accept it. And then it becomes prasadam. The food becomes prasadam. And in India, at least, people value prasadam. Whenever you cook, and you want to transform all those cooked items into prasadam, sometimes we cook for the Festival of Colors last year, we sold $16,000 worth of food. And we cooked and cooked and cooked, and we even had to freeze the stuff because we had to cook. But all it took to offer all that food was to take a portion of each item as it's been prepared. And we don't taste it while we're cooking it, because the idea is the Lord has the first right of enjoyment. So we don't taste anything to see how it's going, you know. If we have to add salt, we do that later. So we just take little portions and we put them in a special plate and cups and bowls that are meant for the Lord and not for use of any other purpose, portions of each one. And then the pujari, the priest, will take and put it up on the altar and he'll bow down. And I'll give you the Sanskrit prayers that we say later on, but if you don't want to be bothered to memorize them, you just say, Lord, You created this. You put the sun and the moon in the sky and the rainfall and the DNA and RNA. So I'm offering to you. You're the enjoyer. You're the creator. You're the proprietor. So you enjoy it. And then after a suitable period of time, like maybe 5 minutes or so, you take the prasadam off the altar. And in India, you'll have lines and lines of people waiting. And the priest will take a little portions of it and put it in their right hands. You don't usually use your left hand in India for eating. And that's another subject matter for a whole other lecture. You take it in your right hand, people very reverently take a little bit of prasadam. And they consider that just like when you take a medicine and it purifies and cures you of whatever ailment you may be suffering from, when people take spiritual food offered to the Lord, they're getting cured from birth, death, disease, and old age. Because it's due to our self-centered enjoying mentality that we come back and we take body after body after body. So when we, instead of seeking for our own personal enjoyment, we seek for the enjoyment of the Lord first, you will enjoy. In fact, we enjoy better through the Lord than we do independently. Just like an example we give so many times, the finger has no independent ability to enjoy. If it plunges itself into ice cream, it can't enjoy. It has to give the ice cream to the mouth, and then the stomach enjoys it, and then the whole body enjoys. So when we talk about seeking the Lord's enjoyment first, we're not divorcing ourselves from enjoyment. We're actually plugging in. We're actually plugging in to the real source of enjoyment, which is service of the Lord. And then after that comes off, as I said, you enjoy prasadam. There's nothing like prasadam. So it's an easy process. If you can't learn three Sanskrit prayers, you can just say, Lord, you created it, so I'm offering to you. Here it said, for the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in order to achieve a permanent, blissful abode for eternal happiness. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easily. Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. Once someone asked Prabhupada, our guru, what do you Hare Krishnas do for recreation? And Prabhupada cocked his head and he looked at him and he said, it's all recreation. We don't have to do anything for recreation. Have you noticed? We get up in the morning, we have a party at 5 in the morning, singing and dancing. We discuss philosophy, we put on festivals, festival of light, festival of colors, Krishna's birthday festival. So many different festivals. We sing, we dance, we discuss philosophy, we eat prasadam, we get energy, and then we go back singing and dancing again. So it is recreation only. And it's a very easy process, and the result of it is that you go back home, back to God, back to the spiritual world. Krishna accepts Now, in India, if you're from India, they have like demigod worship, or Hinduism. What's known as Hinduism includes a lot of worship of demigods for material benefits. You worship the sun for health. You worship the goddess earth for good crops. You worship Lakshmi for money. Whatever you want, there's even someone you worship for a new car, there's someone you worship for a new house, and all those kinds of things. But usually the worship is quite elaborate. You have to have a lot of money. It's quite elaborate. You have to pay the priests quite a bit to sponsor the puja, and then you just get some, you may or may not get something temporary. Now, the demigods are subordinate to the Lord, so they have to ask the Lord, should I give this guy a new car? You know? And if the Lord sanctions, not that the Lord bothers himself with all those details, but basically nothing happens except for the sanction of the Lord. So a lot of trouble, a lot of expense to get something temporary, and ultimately nothing happens except for the sanction of the Lord. But when you worship the Supreme Lord as opposed to a demigod, it's very easy. A flower. I mean, if you're a poor man, maybe you're so poor you don't even have flowers. You ask a neighbor, I'm going to the temple, I want to offer Krishna a flower. Anybody will give you a flower. Yeah, take it and say a good word for me too when you go. You don't have any food. I'm going to the temple. Can you give me a little rice to offer, a coconut? It's not a problem. Anybody can bring something. That's why people that come to the temple regularly, they never come empty-handed, because he's the Lord and we're the same. They always bring a flower, fruit, and so on and so forth. So it says Krishna accepts even a little flower from his pure devotee. He's not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient, and yet he accepts the offering of his devotee in exchange of love and affection. The important element in preparation and serving and in offering is to act with love for Krishna. I remember when I was a kid, my father's birthday would come up. I remember it was October 4th. He's passed away since 1994. When I was a little kid and I didn't have any income, so I'd ask my dad, what do you want for your birthday? And of course, whatever I was going to buy, it was going to come from the like $2 a week allowance that he gave me, so I had a kind of limited budget, you know. I remember he went to University of Pittsburgh and they have the Pitt Panther, so I remember a couple of times I'd get him a little ceramic panther or something, you know, for 50 cents or whatever, you know. And he'd say, you know, I don't really care what you buy me, you know, because, you know, he had everything at a house, he had a car. I mean, what could I buy him, you know, that he didn't already have? And anyway, what I'm buying is with his money anyway that he gave me for an allowance. So what he really wanted was, he said, just give me love. Just give me love and affection. That's what I want. And that's why we give gifts anyway. It's not the gift, but it's the regard and the affection that we feel for other people. So if you enjoy getting a gift on your birthday, and what you really enjoy is not the gift, but the sentiment that someone took the time to go out in trouble and they thought enough of you and of your influence in their lives that they actually spent some of their hard-earned money and time and got you a gift. That's what you really enjoy. Well, God's no different. We're coming from God, so he likes that same thing. That's why we like it, is because it's there in the original person. We like it because he likes it. And so what he really likes is not, you don't have to spend gobs and gobs of money and have tons and tons of flower garlands and hire some fat old priest, you know, to chant just right. Because the essential element is love. God doesn't need your money or your sacrifices because he's self-sufficient. But like every living being, he's addicted to love. He's a love addict and he can't get enough of it. So, talk about enjoying. Someone may get the impression, well, everything for Krishna, we offer it to Krishna, and what do we leave for ourselves? Here it's explained. Yagyasishtashtinashanto munchate sarvakil bashi bunjate te tugam papam ye pachanti abnakaranam. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment eat only sin. See, there's a problem with enjoying independent of God. There's a problem, and that problem is that without taking that one simple step, which takes like less than 30 seconds, of putting separate plate aside, and of course, if you don't have an altar, many of our congregational members, they have a little altar room in their home. If they don't have an altar room in their home, they'll have a picture of Krishna or their guru on the kitchen counter, and they'll have, so they'll offer it. Maybe the family, you know, kids are real hungry. Mom, I'm famished. You know? So anyway, they have a little picture on the kitchen counter and they just do a quick offering before they feed their family. So the problem of not doing the offering is that you're eating sin. So how can you enjoy your life if you're eating sin? How can you enjoy your life if you're eating sin? Like, we're all enjoying freedom now. you have the freedom to come here on a Tuesday night or go somewhere else or come back on a Wednesday night or go somewhere else. Because we follow the laws of the state. We have certain freedoms. We enjoy certain freedoms. We enjoy certain options. Go here, go there, like this and like that. Now the people in the Bluffdale Penitentiary, they don't enjoy the same freedoms that we do. We enjoy. Because they have transgressed the laws of the state. So the problem with eating unoffered food is that you're transgressing universal laws and you're incurring karma. So you can't be happy. Just like a criminal, even if he's not in jail, let's say he's out, you know, let's say he hasn't been caught, they're not happy. They're not happy. They're full of paranoia all the time, you know. They can't even sleep at night without being scared of the, you know, the battering rams, the police, you know, smashing the door down and leveling their... That could happen any time. So how are you going to be happy? Even if you stole $1 million, if you've got to live in fear of the police coming in and thumping you over the head and pulling you off to jail, how can you be happy? Even when you're driving down the street in your Jaguar, you know, stolen, you know, bought with stolen goods, and you see a police car coming up behind you, your heart goes thump, 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 thump. I mean, happens with me too, but to a much lesser degree, you know. I mean, with them, yeah, you know, they're serious. So how can you be happy? I mean, you know, people say, well, I don't want to take the trouble. I'll just eat what I want. But actually, if you're transgressing universal laws, you're going to have this dark cloud hanging over you all the time. So just take a couple of seconds whenever you eat something. Of course, sometimes we have to eat out. Or I was going on the road for... 22 years we sold cookies, and this time of year I would never be in Utah because the cookie sales were outdoors. And it's kind of cold out there to stand there 8 hours a day outside of a Walmart and a Kmart and doing a bake sale. So I would go south. I would go south to sunny Arizona. I remember one Christmas day in Prescott, Arizona. Actually, not all of Arizona is sunny. Prescott, Arizona is about 10,000 feet. So I was standing out there with battery-operated gloves and battery-operated socks, and it was about 5 below. Sold $500 worth of prasadam cookies, though, and it helped pay for this temple. So what do you eat when you're, you know, you can't eat at home, you can't have all these contrived, controlled environment? Well, you just, you know, just fold your hands, get a salad, get a baked potato, fold your hands, and just do your own devotions as best as you can. This is in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has explained that he impregnates the living entities into material nature. This is done by his looking upon material nature. And so in this instance, Krishna's hearing the devotee's words of love in offering foodstuffs is wholly identical with his eating and actually tasting. That's what I was saying before about non-differentiated senses. And one instance of a sense performing a function which normally we wouldn't experience is that when there's a need of creation, there are what we call the conglomerate material elements, earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, false ego. At the beginning of creation, after an annihilation, there's a period of non-manifestation. Then the whole creation starts up again. And so the Lord glances at earth, air, fire, water, all conglomerate, and he impregnates material nature with unlimited spirit souls through his glance, and all of creation starts up again. Example is given... After winter is stark and skeletal and death-like, but all the seeds are there underneath the earth, and in fact, the snow keeps things under the ground warm, and they kind of incubate. And so, when the thaw comes and the spring rains come, then life springs up in the spring in all kinds of colors and all kinds of varieties and all kinds of fragrances and so on and so forth. So in the same way, after an annihilation and when there's a need for a recreation, the Lord glances on the material elements and all living beings spring up in 8,400,000 species of life. So that's glancing. We use a different organ to impregnate, but the Lord can use any organ. They're all interchangeable. So he doesn't have to use that organ. He simply glances at material nature. Similarly, by hearing our prayers, he tastes. He's not exactly tasting the foodstuffs, but he tastes the mood of love and devotion and intelligence with which one offers that foodstuffs. Not even vegetarian, Krishna Prasadam. Like I said, we're not really vegetarians. If you're a vegetarian, you're smart enough to want to reduce your karmic debt from here to here. And that's certainly a good step forward. But to eliminate it altogether, you need to follow the covenant of the Lord and offer him love and devotion, flower, fruit, leaf, and water. Krishna says that food stuff prepared from the vegetable kingdom, anyone offering me with devotion and faith, I eat. Now, some of the practical aspects of preparing prasadam. Here's a sample plate of prasadam. Hare Krishna temples all over the world have Sunday afternoon or evening get-togethers, and it's called the Love Feast, the Krishna Love Feast. Love means love of God. But most people who attend the feasts are due because of love of prasadam. And this is a sample of an offering plate. And you'll notice a lot of the utensils are silver. They're actually silver utensils because you want to offer the best to the Lord. And the ingredients are the best purchased ingredients. Or if you're lucky enough to live in a rural environment, you take those things which you have grown in your garden and you take the very best specimens and you include them as part of the offering that goes on the altar. Avoid meat, fish, and eggs. People ask, what do you eat? I say, a good rule of thumb is we don't eat anything that has a face. No poultry, no fish, you know, no meat, no mammals. We don't eat anything that has a face. Now, rennet and gelatin are made from animal byproducts as well. I think rennet's the lining in the stomach of the cow. When I first started going to India, I think my first trip was in 1969. And when I went throughout the 70s, I think I went about 8 times between 69 and 80. And you used to go into the shoe shops, and of course they're leather items. But there would be tags on the little stickers on the shoes, say this leather is from an animal that died a natural death. People would wait until the animal died a natural death and they would harvest the leather. And other people would eat the meat too. I mean, if you had to eat meat, at least let the animal die and then you can have the meat. They don't do that anymore. My trips to India in the 90s and 2000, I don't see those stickers anymore. So kind of cringe to think of what that might mean. Onion and garlic. Onion and garlic is not a moral issue. You know, it's not so much a moral issue, but it's very hard to be peaceful and calm but if you're eating onion and garlic because they agitate the mucous membranes in the body and they cause you to be quick to anger. You have a trigger finger. You kind of have a short fuse. Warriors, policemen, army people, especially before a battle or before going on maneuvers or whatever, they might want to eat a little onion or garlic, you know, to get kind of jacked up for the challenges that lie before them. But if you don't want to go through your day fighting with everybody, it's better to avoid onion and garlic. They also did a study in China. I forget which it is, but in northern China they don't eat much garlic. Southern China they eat a lot of garlic, or maybe it's the other way around. And they did a study over many, many years and thousands of people. And although garlic has certain benefits like lowering blood pressure and what have you, the people that ate more garlic had more liver disease and more blindness. And that was the only difference in their diets that they could determine. So we want to be cool and calm, and that's why we avoid onions and garlic. We do have a spice called hing or asafoetida, which has a lot of the same sort of pungency, apparently without the side effects. So if you want that taste, something with a little bit of kick to it, and we don't mind chilies, a little bit of chilies now and then too, then one could use those as well. Offering, that's preparing prasadam. Be hygienic. In the temples in India, the priests will take a shower before the... And this is interesting too, in the Jagannath Puri temple where they offer 154 different preparations to the Krishna deity every day, there's a manual what the priest should and shouldn't do. And that manual says there are a number of families and they all donate one shift a week. There are all these Brahmin families and they live within a half a mile of the temple. So the Sharmas come in every Wednesday between 11 and 3 and they cook the noon offering, you know, the Sharmas and all. So it says they have to bathe before they come into the temple. And very interesting, they should eat a full meal at home. And because they're Brahmins and Vaishnavas, they have their home altar and they all, but eat a full meal at home. Because the idea is that when you're preparing the food, you shouldn't be hungry. Because you're lusting after it, you know. You should be satisfied, your appetite should be satisfied. Before you leave home, you come in and you work for 2 or 3 hours in the temple kitchens without hankering after the food and then you offer to the Lord. So those two things, clean, take a shower, and then have a good meal before you go about the process of cooking the offering food. Then when you bring the food, the plate on the altar, you bow down, you say the prayers, and then you don't take the plate right away. You know, like if you're hungry, You'd do that, wouldn't you? You'd say, man, I'm really hungry. So you just kind of skim on the offering and take it back and then eat it yourself. Well, that won't be very conducive to the kind of devotion that we're talking about. Mature devotees that have been preparing food for many, many years get more pleasure out of the offering process than they do of eating it. In the beginning, as a neophyte, when our senses are less in control, we might want to rush the offering or take the plate off a little bit sooner than we normally would because we're just hungry, you know. But as we become more and more mature and more habituated to this system of preparing and offering foodstuffs, we enjoy more and more and more the offering, the outpouring of devotion and gratitude and prayers. And that begins to satisfy us in a more deep, fulfilling way than just, you know, the stimulation of something sliding over the tongue. Of course, we'll eat the food afterwards. But many, many devotees who have been in the movement for 10 or 20 years, they'll make the offering and then they'll distribute all the prasadam to all the people waiting and they'll forget to take any for themselves. And that's not uncommon. So, as I said, the Lord's plate and utensils should not eat. There's a process that after the plate is taken off and taken, there's what's called transferring the plates. Every item is put on a paper plate or a disposable plate or a commonly used plate, but we don't eat anything off of the Lord's plate. And as I mentioned, you'll notice the utensils are made of at least nice silver or stainless steel preparations. And then ideally, of course, we don't have a lot of second initiated Brahmins here, and we make a lot of allowances. If you want to learn how to cook for Krishna and you're not initiated, this is a good place to come because we've only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Brahmins here, and that is far less than what we would need to have a full cooking and serving schedule. So this is a good opportunity to come in and under the guidance of some Brahmins, learn how to observe rules of hygiene, cutting up and cooking, and do everything that's necessary. Now, when Prema bowed down, I don't know if you were here earlier, generally you ring a little bell. And it's kind of calling the Lord's attention. It's when Krishna was on the planet 5,000 years ago and he was performing his childhood pastimes as the son of Mother Yashoda, she would call Lord Krishna by ringing the bell. Krishna, come for your lunch. We have rasgullas, we have puris, we have gulab jamans, we have sandesh, we have palak paneer, we have... Yeah, sounds good, right? So she would call Krishna and she would ring the bell. Just like at the Circle K Ranch, you know, they used to, like that, you know. So she would call Krishna and ring the bell. And so when we bow down and offer, we always ring the little bell. Yeah. So we'll conclude now because go into the next part of our yogic, integrated yoga nights. This is what we call Jnana Yoga, the yoga of knowledge. So you'll learn more about the culture and the lifestyle of devotion. And then at 6:45, every day, Monday through Thursday, we have Tuesdays and Thursdays Hanuman teaches, Mondays Celia teaches, and Wednesdays Ram teaches. So Tuesday's Hanuman's day, and I'm sure you're eager to get into some of those good stretches and postures. Thank you very much.